Welcome to Bi Plus, podcasting for the Bi Plus universe. I'm Ames Leibowitz, and I am here with my co-host, my very special co-host, my son, Jack Mitchell. And today we are being joined by Isis Asare, the CEO and founder of Sista Sci-Fi, a business that focuses on uplifting Black and Indigenous writers. That is freaking amazing. And
I absolutely love that.
I'm so excited to talk to you about this because I know that our listeners are really going to be here for this. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself? Whatever personal or background information you want, anything, this is open.
Yay. Okay. One, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here with you, Ames and Jack. I identify as queer. I'm a first generation Guinean American, meaning I was the first in my family born here. So I currently live in Oakland, California. And oddly enough, Oakland is one of my favorite cities in the whole wide world. Sista Sci-Fi is the fourth business I've started. So I'm a serial entrepreneur. And I started Sista Sci-Fi February 2nd, 2019. I'm an all around like blurred. I probably watch way too much television. I think those are the highlights. I think those are all the key points.
Oh my gosh, four.
Four, yeah, yeah.
I see, yeah. I could hardly imagine even trying to start one. That's a concept that's far beyond the scope of anything I could imagine.
Right, same.
I think partly because I wouldn't be able to, I'd fail to focus on all four of them because I'm trying to focus on all four of them at the same time.
Right. Oh, and I see. So it's like I don't have all four at the same time. I could imagine, but it's the fourth one that I've started. So I'll at different points.
Excellent.
In my life.
Yeah, I think so. Have you done Facebook ads or Twitter ads or something? Because I feel like there's ads or somebody may have shared something and it's turned up for me before because I think I've seen. Or maybe there was an article in an interview. Have you done that before?
Yes, yes, yes to all the things.
Okay.
But it's most likely you saw a Facebook or Instagram ad.
Okay.
And it's me hi, I'm Isis Asare, and I would like to introduce you to your new favorite book boutique. So that was recorded, not here in this room, but in Oakland, California, by Stefano Gonzalez, who's a great filmmaker. And part of the community. So he's Latinx and queer, and a mutual friend connected us. And I was like, I just need a 30 second ad at some, I was doing some virtual event. So I needed it for Afropunk. I just need a 30 second commercial and make me look super smart, but fun. And he did it. So now I use it for everything.
So you mentioned that you watch a lot of television. How about you give our listeners a good recommendation for something that you just love?
Oh, there's so much. Okay, so I'll give two.
Anything.
I watch a lot of television. So I love witches. I particularly love anything with Black witches. So I'm watching Fort Salem. It's Motherland Fort Salem, which I think streams. I watch it on Hulu and I think it's a Freeform show or something like that.
Uh-huh.
So basically, it's alternative history show where if witches were actually witches. So during the Salem trials, one of the witches was like, nah, I'm not having this. There was an accord. And so as part of the agreement that witches would live with humans, witches are conscripted to be a part of the army. And so now witches fight all the battles for the U.S.
Wow.
Yeah, it's set in modern day and it follows three witches who have started basic training in season one, and in season two, they're cadets and doing all that kind of stuff. And society is very different as a witch because everything is matrilineal, and as a witch, you have multiple partners. And each of your male partners give the best of themselves. So you have the most powerful daughter witch. It's, I like the society and the magic. The war is a lot. I was like, wow, there's a lot of war, you think. But yeah, so
That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, so really,
I've enjoyed it.
So that's on Hulu, you said?
That's on Hulu.
Oh.
And I haven't recognized anybody famous in the show.
That's good.
Yeah. So it's just like I'm introduced to these people as their characters. Mm-hmm. The cast is really diverse. So of the three women, one is queer, like she's gay, she's a lesbian. One is Black. And I think that they're straight or maybe kind of like poly or omni or something like that, omnisexual. So yeah, so I like that show. And then the other show is Star Trek Discovery.
Oh yeah.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, we really have to watch that now that we're all caught up on all of our other stuff with Marvel.
You know, we started watching it and then we didn't get any farther. But yeah, I love Star Trek. Like I cut my teeth as a little kid watching reruns of the original. Right. And then my show was just because of my age, I'm the one that I really grew up on. Like I literally grew up, I'm the same age as Will Wheaton. So like I kind of grew up watching Next Generation and, you know, with somebody on the show that was my age. So that was kind of
I think I've watched all the
other series.
Yeah, I think with Discovery, we watched the first episode when they premiered it, and then they moved everything to, what was it, Paramount Plus?
Yep, right. Yep.
But I remember watching that and thinking it was super fascinating. And yeah, so, they did a really nice job.
And I know that they have queer characters and just lots of really cool stuff. So I'm looking forward to watching that.
Yeah, so it's great. So like they... Wilson Cruz from My So-Called Life, now
amazing. Oh, yep.
He's in it. And so he's in a very beautiful couple with a scientist and he's a medical doctor. So that's queer representation. There's one character that's gender nonconforming who's like at one point, because the scene is really awkward. It's like, and she'll do it. And it's like the use of the pronoun felt very heavy. You're like, she's in the room, but they set that all up so they can have the conversation. So she can be like, so that character can be like, my preferred gender pronoun is they, and then they have this whole conversation and there's super
That's
understanding.
Pretty cool.
Or they get the pronoun correct every single time. Like that character is they going on and it just is super smooth. So that was great to see, like not just queerness, but like being gender nonconforming. In the show as well.
So I'm just curious because I haven't seen it and I don't think this is necessarily spoilers, but is the person who's gender non-conforming who uses they, them pronouns, are they human or alien?
The character is human.
Okay. I was just curious because I'm always so torn on this because I love any representation and quite honestly, I really like robots and aliens. So I never truly mind if a non-binary character is an alien or a robot, but I feel like sometimes that's all the representation we get. So I'm always a little torn because dang it, robots are cool, but could they do something different?
And that's a great insight. So I did like this crash course for Candyman, which 2021, which mm-hmm. comes out in like 2 weeks. And so as part of that, we watched Horror Noir and it talks about, particularly in horror, how for ethnic diversity, it was usually like an alien or a monster and other, right? And sometimes you just want to see like a queer character or a Black character or like a woman, right? That's not like Devil Girl from Mars or like it, like you just want to see this human other. So that's a very valid point and is a very common Hollywood trope. In this case, the genderqueer person actually is a human being. So
that's awesome.
Not that there's lots of like aliens and like space things and like melded consciousness and time travel and all that good stuff.
Yeah, I liked it because, you know, I feel like, so I just finished watching The Orville, which is a real interesting and funny, and it's like it's supposed to be satire, but then sometimes it delves into these serious topics and a lot about, you know, what makes someone other, and I just find some of the insight in it fascinating. I'm sure that there's some things in it that are probably problematic, and there's definitely some things with gender that were interesting and the way they handle that. But I otherwise find some of the satire very on point.
Okay, so I haven't watched it, and I do watch a lot of TV, so I'll put it on my list.
Yeah, that one's on Hulu, I think, and it's only two seasons because they didn't continue it. And it feels like, honestly, it's two seasons, but it feels like it could end there if they don't make more. It doesn't feel like, oh, shoot, they left us hanging. They actually left it with a really good ending. So I think that was intentional because it started like during the pandemic, and there was some question of, were they going to have a third season or not? So it's only two seasons, and I thought it was a pretty fun show.
Awesome. I would check that out.
What can you tell us about Sister Sci-Fi?
Wow, Jack, thank you for asking. Sister Sci-Fi is the first Black-owned bookstore focused on science fiction and fantasy. And to give a little context about that, there are about 150 to 200 Black-owned bookstores in the U.S., Sister Sci-Fi being one of them. That's a fun fact that I pulled from Oprah Magazine, because in September 2020, they did a comprehensive list of all the Black-owned bookstores in the country, and they did a highlight on Sister Sci-Fi. There are about 35 to 50 science fiction-focused bookstores, and some of them are like really traditional bookstores. Some of them are more like games and tabletop games or like paraphernalia. And Sister Sci-Fi is, to our knowledge, currently the first to sit at that intersection. And we really focus on like, one, Black sci-fi and horror and fantasy written by Black women, but Black and Native American women. It's not exclusive. So we do tend to carry like every once in a while male characters. Even in those stories, you do see like strong female representation and strong female characters. And also just like, being a part of conversations about Afrofuturism and what does it mean to like look at a future where people of color and oppressed people are like fully empowered. There's this great, there's so many quotes that come to mind, but the most recent one is like, there's this great Octavia Butler point. It says, what if you, instead of thinking we're born with purpose, we're born with potential, like to do whatever and live whatever lies resonated the most with like our passion. So Sister Sci-Fi, we like to think of like we're using these stories to claim our magic and create our future.
That is so amazing.
And I love that. I love that so much.
Did you say there were only, what did you say, 350 Black-owned bookstores?
150 to 200.
150 to 200.
Oh my gosh.
Hardly any. That doesn't feel like enough.
I think with 2000, with the shelter in place, there's a resurgence of more Black-owned bookstores, which is great. And also like to celebrate like the Black-owned bookstores that have been around for like decades, right? Like I live in Oakland, California, so there's Marcus Garvey Bookstores, which is like probably the first or second oldest bookstore in the country, right? And it's just like, I remember growing up and just like Marcus being like just a refuge for me, right? And just like a great resource. And then also to see like new bookstores coming up with like different models. And then I'll plug in Sister Sci-Fi. So yeah.
Yeah. We're gonna have to check and see what there is in our city, because I guarantee we must have one. So we gotta check it out and make sure that we're supporting the owners. We have been really big on, especially since the pandemic started, looking for local businesses, restaurants and stores and all of that, because this pandemic has been so hard on small businesses. So lately, that's kind of our thing, is looking for ways that we can support local creators and businesses. So
awesome. I love it.
Definitely going to have to check out and see what's in the city.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I know we definitely have at least one queer-owned bookstore, but I'm sure that our city is pretty diverse. So there's got to be some good stuff to find.
Y'all are in New York, right? Because I was like, I know at least one. Cafe Con Libros. Libros is in New York. And I think Harrod's Bookshop may be in Philly, but I know it's someplace in the East Coast. It might be in New York.
Yeah. So we're we're in Rochester, which is like an hour from Buffalo, if you know the Buffalo Bills. But that means that we're an hour either way from two other major cities. We've got Buffalo on one side, Syracuse on the other. So, and we travel a lot through Albany, and just to, because we go visit my in-laws in Boston. So I'm sure that we can find lots of good local businesses on our travels.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. So how did you get, now I think you sort of addressed this a bit, but how did you get the idea specifically to start your own sci-fi bookstore with this specific focus? What inspired you?
That's a great question. So I read A Little Spook by Octavia Butler for the first time, and I put out a Facebook post like, oh my God, this book is so amazing. Who wants to discuss it with me? Right. And a lot of people, like with one friend, like I lent her my copy of the book and so forth. And another friend, like Jen May Wu, was like, oh yeah, I'll happily discuss it with you. And so we discussed it and like the themes and like power and so forth, reproductive, right? Sexuality, extraterrestrial, like saving the earth. And then at the end, she started naming all these authors. Like Nnedi Okorafor, Tomi Adeyemi. And this was like maybe 2018. And I was like, yo, I don't know any of these people. And I was like, one, I felt like I read a lot of African-American literature like my whole life. So I was just like, how did this whole genre like totally escape me? And then two, like those two names in particular were West African and I'm Kenyan American. So I was like, what? Like I should have gotten at least one of these two memos. And I think I was like, I don't want anybody to miss this memo ever again in life. Like, I'm like, we're sending this out on blast. So Sister Sci-Fi really initially started as a book club. So the first event was a discussion of The Guild of Stories by Jewel Gomez. Okay. And we actually had, we had that event right here in this building, just like another
room. Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's like coming full circle. Jules Gomez was there, so it was great. We discussed the book. We read some portions out loud. It was super interactive. And then in other parts of that year, we discussed Midnight Robber by Nayla Hopkinson. Mm-hmm. And that was fun, but I wasn't really consistent about like organizing a book club. And so then at parallel, I got more active in other book clubs, like so Solo Power and some others. And it just felt more right for me to like focus on being an online bookstore. And I was doing like different pop-up events. And then COVID happened in 2020. And then COVID actually forced me to become the online bookstore that I started off to becoming. So, or like more like shelter in place. So yeah, so that's how I got the idea, how it was inspired.
Okay, so you do online stuff then?
Yes, so we're like, our sales are like 95% online, and our events now are 98% of them are online. So like people can join, and people have joined from anywhere in the world, which is great. And it kind of like aligns with being like a sci-fi bookstore that we would be very technology first.
Makes sense.
On a related topic, how hard was it then to get Sister Sci-Fi off of the ground? Like, what kinds of support or adversity did you end up encountering?
That's a great question. It sounds funny because I'm like, this doesn't sound right. It wasn't particularly hard, right? Mm-hmm. Because it was like, you know, I'm just start. So first it was a book club, right? And it's like, I'm just tell people, like set up an Eventbrite page, tell people we're reading this book, we're going to get together, we're going to read this book. So that wasn't necessarily hard. And then it was like, oh, and I think it was hard. It wasn't hard because I did not know what I was doing. So I was just like, what can I do? So it's like, oh, I'm just, you know, create a Shopify account. And, you know, set up this store and start selling books. And I think I really launched with like maybe 10 different books. So not a lot of scale. And that was also really easy. I think I set up my Shopify store in like maybe a couple hours. Like I did it myself. And then I think I launched without a logo, and then later on, like a woman that I worked with one of the other three companies, designed the logo, which I still love. And then it was scaling. And it was really like constantly telling anybody who I think I should know, like, hey, I'm Sister Sci-Fi, I'm out here. So, and that, it was actually really cool how like people were like, okay, yeah. So like at the time I was living in Seattle, and so one of my first like pop-up events was vending at Bushwick Book Club, and they were doing, so it's a book club where they work with artists to do songs inspired by a book, which is like such a cool way to interact with the book. Then they were doing a set of performances inspired by Parable of the Sawyer. And I was like, I want to be there. Like, who's actually selling the book? I could be that person for you. Or like when Toshi Reagan was doing a performance of Parable of the Sawyer, the opera in LA, I was like, I can be your bookstore. Like, I will come to LA. I will bring books. And so that, awesome. Yeah, so that was great. So there was just like a lot of, yes, that sounds cool. And then when COVID happened, like, I think I would get like 2 online sales a week, right? Like, I was just excited. Like, yeah, it was like, and also like, it was something I was doing on the side or something like that. And so I was like, since I'm not going to be doing pop-up shops, I really need to get people to the site. So I started like reaching out to bloggers, like Shop Black had a list of like, what are Black owned bookstores that you could buy from online right now? And I was like, please include Sister Sci-Fi. And they were like,
yeah.
And then June happened, or like May, June. And I think it just, that time 2020 reminded people that we're not in a post-racial society, mm-hmm. that we're still battling with a Trump presidency. There was the death of George Floyd. And so I think there are a lot of lists by Black. And so because we were in Black, then we were included in other lists, like sci-fi.com had a list, BuzzFeed had a list that included Sister Sci-Fi, Condé Nast, like a whole lot of others. So that just drove a lot of traffic to the site. I wasn't ready. Like, my inventory wasn't ready. Like, there's some people like, it's been 2 months. It's like, where's my book? And I'm like, I got you. It's coming. I'm learning. But in general, it was okay. I think that April I launched like the Sister Sci-Fi author list shirt. So that was a lot of fun. That's mm-hmm. gained a lot of traction. And it's like, what I love is that people who love sci-fi don't necessarily read for entertainment. They read to really think critically about the world and how they can change
it.
So it has been awesome.
I see that sometimes with people who are into certain types of gaming too, that there's games that invite that kind of conversation. So I love that.
As someone who's a very prominent gamer as well, I definitely agree with that. There's some games where I play it not so much for the fact of, you know, enjoying it, but for the fact that there are themes that, you know, I can really think about.
Yeah.
And that just, it sort of invites me to keep on going back to it.
That's awesome. Yeah. One of our most popular authors, N.K. Jemisin, like, she has a Twitch account. And I was like, I didn't know she was a gamer, but apparently she's a gamer. So, yeah.
Oh my gosh, she's amazing. She's probably one of my very, very favorite authors. And I was introduced to her by way of a free sample. It was a free sample. Well, not free, technically not free, because it was on Kindle Unlimited. Okay. So it wasn't really free, but free to me. Collection to introduce people to a wide range of sci-fi authors. And she was among them. And I read her story and went, okay, this is somebody I just need to read more books. I just, like, her style felt very, again, like that on point kind of highlighting those issues, but at the same time, very conversational, at least in that story. And that was what drew me in, was that I didn't feel like I had to I didn't feel like I had to struggle too much with the language. There wasn't a lot of, what do you call it? Like a technobabble.
Yeah, all the future jargon.
Yeah, future jargon. It was really very character driven. So it was focused on the people, which is my favorite type of literature. I'm one of those, I will try anything types of readers. So I have not yet met a genre that I won't read anything in it.
I love readers like you, but yeah. So that short story was Emergency Skin. And she really created a compelling story that also addressed a lot of social issues. Mm-hmm. Actually, one of our last in-person book clubs, we discussed Emergency Skin. It's one of like my favorite pictures. There's like 20 of us in like the super colorful apartment. Just really like that afterglow of that conversation.
That's great. I couldn't find anybody else who'd read it at the time that I read it. And I was like, shoot, I need 10 people to talk to about this.
Because it's like, there's so many great themes. And the reason, like the person who organized it, the reason why we picked Emergency Skin is like, you could read it in like a couple hours, right? And then be ready for the book club. Which is like, it can be kind of daunting with the book. Like you plan to join a book club like a month out. And like the day before the book club, you're like, I have not even opened the first Her short story collection, How Long to Black Future Month, also has a lot of other stories like that. So yeah.
But yeah, I just love her stuff. I like anything that's very character driven, where that's the whole focus of it. So that's amazing. So do you actually get to meet any of the authors or go to conferences or?
So I have not been to a conference since COVID. I have a high level.
Yeah.
I tell people that like my COVID anxiety is super real.
Well, I'm not sure because I went to an online conference. So,
and those are cool too. So I met Justina Ireland before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We did a virtual event with NK Jemisin and Mickey Kendall, and Mickey Kendall joined like the Zoom after party, like on a surprise. We were just like, I was like, in the crowd cast with both of them, they're like, we need a Zoom after party. I'm like, okay, we can put together a Zoom after party. And then they're like, no, we can't make it. And then we were in the Zoom and then Mickey was there. And Mickey's like, I could stay for 5 minutes. And then she ended up staying like the whole time. So that was really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I've worked with L.L. McKinney, who did Nubia, the most current one. John Jennings is actually really cool. So he did the Parable of Sawyer graphic novel adaptation and Kindred, and he runs an imprint with Abrams Book. He's come to like 2 or 3 sister sci-fi graphic novel clubs. He's super talented and just like a big advocate of like the whole Black sci-fi community.
That's awesome. that's just, all of this is just so great to me. I know I keep gushing, but like I just, every time I'd see the ad in my newsfeed, I was like, this is so amazing. So pardon me for like fan crushing on your bookstore.
I like it too. So
do you actually have any brick and mortar, or is it pretty much just online?
Yeah, we get that question a lot. And for a long time, I'm like, no, what would happen is I'd get like a social media message, like, I'm trying to come to your store. And I'd have to be like, where are you going? So what I decided in August was that what we're going to start doing is open houses. And so allow people to come into like, which is basically our fulfillment center, but it's kind of cute. It's not like terrible.
Yeah.
To come in Saturday mornings, get to know me. I get to know them. We can talk about books. And in Oakland, the Oakland Museum of California, mm-hmm. In this month launched a whole Afrofuturism exhibit. So it's everything from W.E.B. Du Bois to Octavia Butler to Sun Ra to,
very cool.
Yeah, the whole gamut of Afrofuturism. And so I worked with them to like make it a package deal. So you come to the Sister Sci-Fi open house, you get a ticket to that exhibit at the Oakland Museum. So
cool.
Saturday will be our third Saturday. And it's a good way to allow people to like come into the store without having like all the operational pressure of like managing.
Yeah, that actually does make sense. I mean, it seems like online is thriving a little bit more right now because of so many in-person places being closed. So, and, you know, when that's more convenient, it seems like, okay, well, here we are. But I like that idea of open houses where you get to know the people who are purchasing from you. That's actually really cool.
And then you also get to know, like, connect with each other, which is really cool. Yeah. So, and when people like, well, I can't make it, I was like, we also do like lots of virtual events where you can join from anywhere in the world. And that's also been a good source of community. So,
yeah. I mean, honestly, as somebody who grew up kind of before the explosion of the internet, to me, every time I'm able to connect with somebody in, you know, we connected with people in, we had a virtual event and there were people there from Pakistan. And it's like, I can talk to somebody from all the way around the world. So I love that you get these virtual events where you can do that.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
I don't think I will ever lose my amazement for that. I hope I don't lose my amazement for that.
And it's like a powerful technology, right? And I think that's kind of like that intersection of like science and technology and like fantasy and magic, right? Because 100 years ago, this, like, if you'd showed somebody this, what we're doing right now, they'd be like, what is that magic? Like, why is Ames? Where's she in the back? Where is she on that computer, right? But like now it's like our day to day. So yeah, it's really powerful. So
it really is.
Yeah, and of course, now I gotta know, do you happen to have any upcoming events, obviously either in person or online? I know you mentioned there was an event on Saturday where people could come in and you could, you know, sort of get to know them, but is there anything else in that vein?
The answer to that is always yes. So there's always an event. tonight we're wrapping up our Crash Course Candyman. We are collectively reading / listening to The Forbidden, which is a short story that would ultimately become the movie, which inspired like that trilogy and then also the remake. So that should be like, I'm really excited about the conversation because there were a lot of changes from the short story by Clive Barker to what would become the movie. And so I think that will facilitate like a great and deep conversation. This Saturday, we're having another open house. And then at the end of this month, we'll start another Crash Course, which will be a discussion of One Blood. So let me geek out for a second. Of One Blood is by Pauline Hopkins, who was a writer in the early 1900s. And so she published this book in 1902. And this book was probably the first fantasy, like broadly defined, like horror book written, sci-fi book written by a Black person. And it's definitely one of the first books written by an African-American author with African-American characters that also has some settings in Africa. It blends several different genres, and there's definitely like themes that are very due to the period, like, you know, women tend to be super passive, even though she's a female writer and so forth. But she does a great job in discussing race and autonomy and like holding a lens to racism and racial identity. So I'm really excited about that Crash Course. The first one, which kicks off August 29th, we'll have a Q&A by Nisi Shaw, who's also a sci-fi writer who wrote the introduction for the latest release of Unknown Blood by Poisoned Pen Press. I'm excited to geek out about that and just kind of pull apart all and analyze all the different themes in that book.
So I'm curious to know, do you mostly sell physical books or do you sell also ebooks or...
That is a great question. So we in terms of sales, most of our sales are from physical books. We offer audiobooks through an amazing partner called Libro FM. So you can come to our site. You can see the books that we have, like a Hostess of Sci-Fi playlist, which I probably need to update. But like, you can create an account, like Libro FM has like hundreds of thousands of titles. And then like, if you decide, any book you purchase can support Sister Sci-Fi. We also work with Hummingbird Media to offer ebooks because we've been asked. So that's that. So going to like, there's a lot of irony in like being a bookstore and selling a lot of physical books, because before I started Sister Sci-Fi, I think I had like one bookshelf of like personal books, and it was like some of the shelves are like half full because, you know, books are heavy. So it's very fascinating, like, to see how much people still really enjoy purchasing and having a physical book, because for me as a reader, I tend to like, I love the audiobook, right? Because I can like read the audiobook like while walking or washing dishes and so forth.
Right.
Now that I have a bookstore, what I tend to do is like read the, like listen to the audiobook while reading the book, which actually just ultimately ends up like having somebody read the book to me. So yeah.
Yeah, I've occasionally, when I've had a Kindle book, I've had Siri read it to me, and it is not the same as an audiobook.
It's a little different.
I mean, it is a little bit like having someone read it to me, but also not.
I mean, like, you know, Siri, lots of talents. I don't think acting is one of them. So.
Nope. So here's another question. Do you work with the publishers to get the books, or do you work with indie publishers or primarily the larger publishing companies?
That is a great question. So I'll answer that question directly and then the broader question link. So how do you choose your titles? Because I get that, yeah, that answer a lot. So there's a mix of like how I source the book. So I do have like a really good relationship with Hachette, because they publish like some of my most prolific authors, like Octavia Butler, Nalo Hopkinson, N.K. Jemisin, right? So like, that's like a lot. So that's like working with Hachette is how I was a part, like selected as one of the 10 bookstores to be a part of the launch of N.K. Jemisin's The City They Became in paperback, which was like huge for Sister Sci-Fi. Then there's some, like, I work with some smaller publications. So we just talked about Poison Pen Press, which reached out to me. And then also I'm carrying, because it's right here, I just, this book, which is by Flame Tree Publishing, which is based out of the UK. So I'll work with them. And then for, I'm beginning to build relationships with other big publishers, such as Macmillan. There are a lot of publishers. So, but since there's so many, for a lot of the other titles, I just get them from like Ingram, which is the distributor.
Yeah.
Which is, I think most bookstores have more direct relationships, but right now I'm like a two-person shop. So it's like, I need to
optimize. Yeah, yeah.
In terms of selecting the titles, right, there's some like authors that are like, if they publish something new, I'm going to carry it. So, Net44, when Noor comes out in, I think, November, I'm going to carry it, right? When I Caught a Woman, which is the third book in the DC series, comes out in January, I'm going to carry it. If there's some new, like, post-hominous, I don't think I pronounced that right, but publication by Octavia Butler, I'll carry that too. Now, more contemporary stuff, there's, even with my focus, there's always so much in the space. And so historically it's been like, oh, I think I like this book, I want to read this book, I'm going to carry it. Or what most likely happens is a book club has decided to read it. And I'm like, oh, I'll carry that. So that's how I ended up carrying An In Kindness of Ghosts. It's one of my favorite books on the site. I'm always talking about An In Kindness of Ghosts. And I read it like 2 years ago. Like, I'll read it again. I love River Solomon. But that was a book that was introduced to me by a book club. I get a lot of author inquiries, And I was like, I need a good way to respond to this. I haven't figured out at scale, but what I'm going to start doing in September is having my customers vote. Like, these are the books that I'm considering launching on the site, both by like big publishers and indie authors. What do y'all want? Is there anything I have on the site that I should probably take down? And so, yeah, and making that like a community conversation.
That's really cool. I love that. I mean, that seems like, well, you know, these books are books that invite community conversation. So that actually makes a lot of sense. is there anything else that you wanted to tell us or anything we missed? I feel like there's so much that we could talk about, like we could really just nerd out, but is there anything that we missed?
I mean, as like, just be careful because it'd be like 12 o'clock the next day. You're like, we're still talking about books. So, yeah. I think, yeah, and it Sister Sci-Fi is a community effort in that regard. I love telling people about our future plans. One thing that, and it kind of goes into like physical presence. One thing I would love to do is have like a network of automated vending kiosks and Black-owned coffee shops across the country. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking for this, like a curated selection of science fiction written by Black and Native American authors, or some merchandise related to Afrofuturism, like you don't have to be tied to like ordering online. Like you can go to your favorite Black-owned coffee shop wherever you are in the country and like make an easy transaction. And like be able to take that book home with you that same day. In terms of next steps for that, it's like reaching out and getting confirmation from Black-owned bookstores, from Black-owned coffee shops. So in that process right now, it's been kind of like interesting because the idea came up like maybe right before COVID. So yeah, that made things interesting. But always like if there's a Black-owned coffee shop that's interested, I'm always excited about those conversations.
That is just great. Everything about this delights me. But yeah, this is just incredible. Like I feel like I just want to tell everybody, I want to make sure everybody I know listens to this podcast so they know about this and know that you exist.
Like.
So no, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for giving me the chance to do this interview. It's really fun. Yeah, this is a lot of fun.
Yeah, and because you know it's sort of a community effort. How then could people like us? How would we be able to support your work?
I'm so happy you asked that question. There are a couple different ways. you can like engage with us on the socials, so Instagram, Facebook. We have to work out our Twitter strategy. Or sign up for our email list. And go on beyond the like, I like this or I follow this, but really like engage in the community. What I love right now is like, in terms of our, like particularly on Instagram, there are people who just like comment, I am commenting to like boost this up, right? And I love that because the fact that they've commented like shows like the Facebook algorithm, the Instagram algorithm that this is engaging content. And then makes it more discoverable for other people. And that gives visibility to the store, but more importantly, gives visibility to these stories, right? So,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
that tell your friends. So, like, if you get an email, just I got the email this week and forwarded it on to like one friend that week. That can be huge just to get brand awareness out. Attending a virtual event, that's always a good way to support. And there's always so many, and virtual events are typically free. And then, I mean, like, of course, buy books, but there's no pressure because, like, there's so many good places to buy books that the key way to support is just helping us, you know, spread the word and letting people know that these authors are doing amazing work.
Absolutely. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm just in awe of anyone who can put this together. Like that takes a business mind. So this is just amazing. I really appreciate that you were able to come and chat with us today.
Yeah.
I really appreciate the invitation. So I was like, ooh, what's this email? But this was a lot of fun. Ames, Jack, it was a pleasure talking to you. This is so cute that y'all are mother son team. So yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, well, it was so awesome talking to you because, like, knowing this is online, this is a place that, from home we can support. And like,
Right,
I
right.
absolutely love that.
Me too.
100%.
Well, thank you again for joining us today. This has been a conversation with Isis Asare, the amazing owner of Sister Sci-Fi. And you can find that online at sistersci-fi.com. Thank you, Jack, for being my co-host today and stepping in. We had some big shoes to fill. And I am Ames Leibowitz, and this has been the Bi Plus podcast. Remember, there is a whole Bi Plus universe ready to embrace you. Reach out and find your community.